Welcome back to The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. Last week, President Biden announced that he's sending American troops back into Somalia. Here's White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
The president has approved a request from the Secretary of Defense to reestablish a persistent U.S. military presence in Somalia to enable a more effective fight against al-Shabaab, which has increased in strength and poses a heightened threat.
The United States has a long history of military presence in Somalia, dating back to the early 1990s when President H.W. Bush ordered U.S. troops into the country. Then it was embroiled in civil war. But President Clinton withdrew the troops in 1994. But after 9/11, American troops re-entered Somalia during our country's sweeping counterterrorism efforts abroad. In the waning days of his presidency, President Trump ordered the withdrawal of all American troops from the country. But now, less than a year and a half later, President Biden is sending back 500 service members. Here to help us understand why is Omar Mahmoud, senior analyst for Somalia for the International Crisis Group. Omar, thank you for joining us all the way from Mozambique today.
Oh, happy to be here.
All right, let's just start at the core. Why did President Biden send troops into Somalia?
Well, I think in part it is essentially reversing the decision made in the waning days of the Trump administration, which was not necessarily to take troops away from the fight in Somalia, but basically reposition them within the region. So just not have them on the ground physically in Somalia. But these troops are essentially training part of the Somali National Army. And I think that training has suffered over the past year and a half. And so essentially Biden made this decision to send the troops back in. And it really coincided with Somalia's political cycle because it came the day after very long overdue elections were finally completed.
All right, let's go back a bit. Help us to understand what U.S. military involvement in Somalia has been.
Well, essentially, the U.S. has been trying to take a counterterrorism approach to contain the group al-Shabaab. And so al-Shabaab is this militant actor within Somalia, but it's also, you know, an actor that governs large parts of South Central Somalia and is locked into combat with the government there. And this is a war that's been going on for 15 years, you know, a war the U.S. has been a part of really from the very beginning. And at this point, it's essentially about containing al-Shabaab more than anything. I mean, if you look at the sort of read between the lines in the announcement from the White House about this, you know, it was about, you know, getting that training program started up again for the Somali National Army, but also about ensuring that al-Shabaab's leaders who are engaged in attacks outside of Somalia are targeted. So it's more about containing, I think, this to Somalia, ensuring that al-Shabaab, you know, doesn't become a regional threat or something beyond.
All right. Go back farther for me, though, because I guess part of what I'm wondering is, when the U.S. is in Somalia, is it effective? Has our intervention led to a protection of either Somali or U.S. interests in this sense?
So this is where I think the counterterrorism focus is a bit too narrow. You know, I mean, that's one subset of a wider set of issues in Somalia that are chiefly political at its core. So essentially, you know, the U.S. has been involved in trying to contain this group, al-Shabaab. But, you know, I would argue those efforts really haven't worked that well. Yes, sending back some troops or resuming airstrikes does place pressure on the group at some level, but it doesn't alter the long-term trajectory of the conflict. You know, these U.S. troops have been on the ground before, you know, strikes have been going on before at high rates sometimes, yet al-Shabaab was still a very strong actor in the Somali sphere. And so I think we have to see the counterterrorism approach in these dynamics as just one subset of a bigger puzzle. You know, it's only one part of the security picture to begin with, and then the security picture is only one part of the wider issue we see in Somalia. And really that comes down to sort of the political dynamics, the conditions that allow a group like al-Shabaab to thrive because of political grievances, and that Somalis are kind of so divided internally.
All right. What are some of those conditions? Help us to understand what Somalia faces as a nation that allows this set of political realities to exist.
Yeah, well, I mean, essentially, Somalia is coming back from a very tough period of state collapse. So in the early 90s, you know, the previous government collapsed, and for about a decade, there wasn't really coherent structures on the ground. And rather, starting from the mid-2000s, there was this attempt and this support from the outside to really start reinstituting a government, a federal government in the country. And that's made significant progress over the past 15 years as well. But it's dogged by consistent divisions between the Somali political elite, which basically means they're not on the same page. And so, you know, that benefits an actor outside the system like an al-Shabaab, you know, if the system's not united against it. And then on top of that, you have a very significant layers of sort of grievances at the community level, because the 1990s period, you know, after state collapse, there was very intense civil war. A lot of those grievances haven't been addressed. There hasn't been comprehensive reconciliation. So a lot of the communities then at the lower level aren't getting along with each other either. And again, that benefits an actor like al-Shabaab. So I think you can try to target al-Shabaab and you can try to attack it. But at the same time, if we're not addressing these political dynamics, we're not addressing the social grievances, I think they'll always find room to maneuver.
Help us to understand also what I understand to be the actual sort of context of environmental and poverty concerns as well.
Yeah, I mean, Somalia does sit in a very harsh, arid environment. You know, it's typically a population that's quite nomadic. And unfortunately, we've seen as a result of some of these climate changes over the past decade, reoccurring droughts. You know, there's two rainy seasons in Somalia, and right now about four of them in a row have failed. So there hasn't been enough rain on the ground, and that puts extreme pressure on you know, raising cattle and of course, even the small sedentary farming that happens in the country as well. So right now, there's a very significant drought ongoing. The current rains have also been below schedule. The projections for the next rains also look below schedule. And so there's a very real risk of these compounding dynamics morphing into a famine. And this is something we've seen at least three times over the past decade in Somalia. So it's a very difficult environment as well from that perspective.
Is Somalia, we're talking about 500 troops, that can feel like a lot or very few, I suppose, depending on whether your daughter or mother or son is among those who are there. But is this the sort of space the U.S. is likely to be in, you know, forever, and, you know, being careful with that language forever, but the sort of forever war space, or is this a place where progress can be made by our presence?
I think this is part of the challenge when you look at, you know, a redeployment of a couple hundred troops. You know, how does that fit into the wider picture so you don't get trapped in one of these ongoing wars? And honestly, this has been ongoing for 15 years in Somalia. And so what we would argue is we do need to look at that wider picture and kind of take a different approach, perhaps. I mean, there is the military approach, you know, this is part of it. You know, I think at some point there needs to be a more inclusive political settlement that would include whoever you could bring in from the militant groups. You know, I don't know if you can just continue to really fight ongoing forever. But so sort of the difference, or I guess the reason why I think the U.S. feels comfortable about doing this now is because they didn't feel progress was being made the last couple of years. So under the previous administration, and then because of these elections that were supposed to happen, which were 16 months overdue. And so there wasn't much progress being made. But with the conclusion of that cycle, I think the U.S. feels a little more hopeful that now there's a different trajectory and they can sort of claw back some of the gains. What we would argue, though, is that's not a long-term solution still.
Just one last question for you. Obviously, you're talking about the Biden administration, right? But both of us are kind of using this shorthand of the U.S., right? The U.S. sees it this way and that way. And I'm wondering, I guess, about public attention. You know, we are here at the end of a very difficult couple of weeks in domestic concerns. It's been difficult to even find space to talk about U.S. political questions. I'm wondering about the not only the domestic sort of politics for the Biden administration, but for the American people who may not have their eye or their attention on Somalia. If there is one takeaway for our listeners about this conflict, what would you have that to be?
I think our takeaway would be that the military approach is not going to resolve this conflict. And so what we've seen from the U.S. thus far is, again, a default to a military approach, a default to a focus on counterterrorism. And we would argue that needs to be a much broader, holistic sort of strategy to really get at the root causes of this, to really make progress, to ensure this is not an ongoing, an endless war.
Omar Mahmoud, Senior Analyst for Somalia for the International Crisis Group. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Oh, thank you for having me.